You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Morning to you. Mike McNamara for Friday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. And I think like most of the country, watching the events out of Minneapolis last night and today, and you know, what in God's name? I mean, seriously, what in God's name were those cops doing? Now, in talking about this stuff in the past, you know, because we've been on the air for 4 years, and it's happened in Minnesota before, twice. So you have a community that is no stranger to police violence. I think we all remember two huge stories that came out of the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, but they all come out of Minneapolis. The first one was, I think his name was Philando Castile. And his fiance or girlfriend is driving a car that gets pulled over for a traffic light. And he gets killed. He's got a concealed carry permit. He's telling the police officer, "Hey, man, I got a gun." And the dude loses his mind and fucking kills him. While this guy is, you know, he's got his hands out, he's telling the cop, and you can hear the cop screaming, right? And he kills him. On, you know, video, and then his, you know, his girlfriend streamed it on Facebook. Not exactly, I think, what my first instinct would be in that situation, but, and the chef is going to be here today. Exciting, going to be an exciting day here. Then the next one was the Australian woman. She had phoned the Minneapolis Police Department. Right? And she said she thought there was some kind of assault taking place in the alley behind her house. The police show up. She goes out to meet him. And some idiot cop named Noor, I've never heard of anything like this in my life. He's sitting in the passenger seat of the police vehicle. She's walking up on the driver's side of the car. He pulls his weapon and shoots across his partner's face and kills her. Kills her, an unarmed woman. So the city of Minneapolis is no stranger to these events. And so that's the first thing you have to know. Second, I'm not sure if you've watched it or not, right? And I didn't watch it till this morning because the short clips I'd seen were, in my opinion, were disgusting. I did not want to watch 9 minutes of video of how George Floyd died. But I'm going to talk about it today. You better have watched it. Things I'll tell you. When you see people, police officers, do stuff like this, first of all, they learned it someplace, and it's not the first time they're doing it. Okay, so know that. And I know that because of different violations of the law of armed conflict that I was a part of investigations and privy to information about investigations. When you see things that have gone wrong, trust me, it ain't the first time. It wasn't choir boys that got lost on the way to church, okay? They did this on a regular basis. People look the other way, yada, 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 yada. So know that. Forgery in progress, the police respond. They meet him in his car. Gets out of his car. He's handcuffed. They seat him against the wall. He sits there. So if you watch the surveillance video from a store and you combine that with the police, their own body cam video, and then you combine that with the video of the bystanders took, you essentially see the whole thing. So now he's sitting against the wall, right? And there's nothing going on. There's a number of, I want to say there's three different police cars in the area. And he gets brought to his feet. Cops stand there talking to him. And they walk across the street. And now they take him on the street side of the police car that they're evidently going to put him in. Now, you don't see what happens. The next thing you see is the video that a bystander took of him on the ground. And you see a cop killing him. And the cop's sitting there like it's nothing. That's what, to me, is amazing. Now, there's four police officers there. That's what's so stupid about this. There's four police officers there, and he's handcuffed. So let's just say, and again, it bothers me to say this, but I will. Let's just give the police the benefit of the doubt. As they try to put him in the car, there's a struggle. He gets pissed or whatever, and he winds up on the ground. Okay, there's four cops. They can't, all four of them cannot get him in the vehicle. One has to pose himself to keep people away. All right. So three of those cops can't get him in the vehicle, and they kill him. It's so discouraging. And then, in the other news reporting, what you see is, I saw an interview with Eric Gardner's mother. Now, Eric Gardner was selling cigarettes on the streets of New York City and was no stranger to the police. And he was ultimately put in a chokehold and he died. And one of the things you hear him say is, "I can't breathe." Okay, and again, you have how many police officers on top of them? Okay, so watching this is just, in my opinion, it's so disgusting. It's so disgusting because of the mannerisms of the officer that's on top of him. He's got his knee, right? And he's not a small guy. He's a pretty big dude. He's got his knee on his neck, and he's got his head smashed against the concrete. Now, I don't know about you, but if you've ever had your head smashed like that, I mean, that's excruciating pain. And that's how this guy subdues guys on a regular basis? And again, there's four cops there. Again, it's not like this guy's by himself and he's terrified for his life, because George Floyd, he's a big dude. Okay? He's a big dude. But again, four cops, completely unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. And I don't know. The nation I live in, the military that I've served in doesn't see color. And I just that's, to me, you know, the majority of the United States. And then the other thing you talk about is the power of video in these instances, right? The power of video in these instances. And again, if you try to say, okay, look, the police did not get up that morning. The police did not get up that morning looking to go kill somebody. They went to work to do their jobs that day. So what happened? How does something like this happen? And so if you try to be reasonable, and I think, you know, the events in Ferguson are emblematic of that. You know, the story that was initially Big Mike, he was getting on his knees, and that was not true. Okay. But the story as ultimately told is of a police department, you know, that essentially preys on people. And a lot of them in the black community. And that's by the Justice Department. The way they ticketed was based on their need for revenue, stopping vehicles and whatnot. So there was a feeling among the black community of hatred for the police because they exploited them. And they did it for revenue. And there was a constant push by the treasurer or the chief financial officer of the city of Ferguson to the police chief that we need more money. And your guys got to write more tickets. Because that's how you get money without raising taxes. How about that? Beautiful, right? So anyway, but again, so you try to give cops the benefit of the doubt because it isn't always what it seems. And Ferguson wasn't what it seemed. And you had guys on TV every night, that Don Lemon dude going down there. And in my opinion, He made all of that worse, and it was a false premise. You look at the young kid that just got shot down in Florida, you know, two vigilante dudes, and he winds up dead? Over what? Over what? And then this is so far beyond the pale, it's a joke. It's a joke. Four cops there for a possible forgery, and this guy's dead. And let me tell you, that cop's going to jail. There's not a doubt in my mind. There's no way that you can justify what he did. And it's interesting to hear other cops, you know, watch it and then comment on it. Like, yeah, that ain't right. It's not what you do to people. And it's sure as hell not what you do to people when you got four cops standing there. And again, but to me, what's most chilling is watch the expressions of the cop that's on top of him. He's as calm could be. He doesn't pay any attention to the things that George Floyd said. Now, the rioting, I would tell you, the mayor of Minneapolis, young dude, in over his head. And I know there's a, you know, you try to de-escalate situations and things like that. But what you don't do is you don't allow, right, part of your city to be destroyed because people are pissed. And that's what he did. He's afraid. So you'll see, you know, him posture and whatnot. But bottom line is that dude in over his head. And again, because you're elected doesn't make you a leader. And you've seen an awful lot in the COVID-19 response of people that are supposed to be elected. Well, there's people that are elected, but they're not leaders. Leaders are no strangers to making hard decisions. Leaders are familiar with decision-making in a dynamic event. Politicians are not. Politicians are neither. So when they're put into those situations, they struggle mildly, and what you saw overnight is emblematic of that. And again, you know, the other thing is, in this world we live in now, so much of it is driven by video. You know, the USS Roosevelt, the only reason that was a story was because of the video, in my opinion. Otherwise, I mean, the fact that the CO got relieved and all that, that's a 2 or 3 day event. You know? But when the video gets shown of this, you know, of maybe 150 sailors on a ship of 4,800 chanting his name as he leaves, that goes viral and the whole world sees it. So pretty interesting, you know, what propels these issues. And, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. I mean, as tough as some of these things are to watch, again, I just find it hard that in this day and age, and you try, and again, I'll tell you this, I go out of my way to understand, you know, some parts of our inner cities, some parts of our communities are rife with drugs and weapons. And the police go into those every day, right, to try to protect and serve. And 99% of those cops do their job every day. And selflessly. Somebody sent me a story he's a first lieutenant in the North Dakota National Guard, and he was killed last night as a police officer responding to sheriffs were pinned down in an apartment as they tried to evict somebody, and he responded to support it, and he was shot multiple times, and he's dead. Yeah, that's in where I used to live in North Dakota, where Kim is from. And so, you know, that's 99% of them. They do their job, and they do great work every day. And let me tell you, it's not an easy job. It's not an easy job. And so whenever these things happen, the first thing I try to do is say, hey, look, there's two perspectives of this. There's somebody who, you know, gets sideways with the police, and then there's a police perspective where they walk in and they don't know. The uncertainty of, you know, is this guy going to try to kill me? Does he have a weapon? All that. And the worst part about the George Floyd thing is he doesn't. And he's in cuffs. And there's four police officers there. And there's nothing going on. And they can't solve that. It's just, you know, and you know, I was thinking, and had a couple conversations with people because this came up with friends and stuff last night. And I ask, if we, my friends, were growing up in the 60s and the 50s and we were black, would we have been Malcolm X guys or Martin Luther King guys? And my opinion is most of my friends and I would have been Malcolm X guys. We might have started out as, you know, Dr. King guys. But I think we would have seen, if we saw the violence, we would have said, sorry, ain't having that anymore. Got to be, you know, turn the other cheek is like, yeah, that's good for Dr. King, but that's not good for me. So to me, as much as I think the looting is bullshit, and I don't see it, you know, the people that go loot something, I don't see that as a protest to this. I see that as opportunistic assholes. But I understand the outrage. I understand the outrage, and were I a part of that community, I'd be pissed. How the fuck does this keep happening? And how do we make it stop? How do we make it stop? How do we make it stop? And there's two components to it, too. One is when the police show up, cooperate with them. Second thing is if you're a police officer, do the right thing. And, you know, it just, I don't know. You see this shit? And it's crazy. The other thing, though, that I have to mention, you know, Colin Kaepernick's name is, you know, is in the news again, and different people commenting on social media that are athletes, right? Specifically basketball players. And I would say this. You all showed your colors during the NBA China thing. Because that thing got near your money, you didn't say shit. And oddly enough, Hong Kong's back in the news again. And they won't say shit about the people that will die in Hong Kong in their fight for freedom because their money was at risk. And that's why they didn't say shit before. Colin Kaepernick, whose huge Nike campaign is this, stand for something even if it costs you everything. Right? Those are the most hollow words ever because when it got near Nike's wallet and it affected sales in China, Colin Kaepernick didn't say anything. He's as big of a sellout as anybody who he ever talked shit about. But this is the United States now, so it's different because China can snip Nike, right, yesterday. Yeah, don't fuck with them. Oh, the United States, you can fuck with everybody. Yeah. But you don't have to be a man of principle, even though you say you are. I've about had enough of that shit, too. So anyway, good morning to you on a Friday. Not exactly what I want to talk about, but unavoidable. Unavoidable in terms of you watch that video, calm as day, crushing that dude's head into the sidewalk with three other police officers standing around. At some point, don't we say, hey, all right, you got the left leg, you got the right leg, I got I got him by the arms. And he's cuffed. Let's throw him in the back seat. And let's get out of here. Because we know what happens, right? We do this shit in and again, that's the stupid thing about it. The cops know, right? They know what's gonna happen. There's people out, people are starting to react. And they kill the dude. So yeah, on that. Good morning to you on a Friday. Whitney Houston, it is Friday. She makes it official. What would I say? What's the appropriate thing? The people of Minneapolis need to get out there and protest. The people of Minneapolis. In a huge protest that lets their mayor know, that lets their police department know, we are not having this. We expect more of you. This is three people, innocent people, killed because of police misconduct. Because they can't handle their fucking job. So I'm not sure what the answer is, man. The police department, you know, in Minneapolis got to get its shit together. Got to get its shit together. And let me tell you, it's been a problem for a while. So, good morning to you. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem on this Friday, the 29th of May, the last Friday of the month. June starts next week. and then and the chef's going to join us. So should be a happy day. But I have to tell you, talk about something that's disturbing. And when I say protest, everybody ought to be protesting in Minneapolis. Everybody ought to be. It's too. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on in that city. So, but the looting and you know, the rioting and shit, that's bullshit, right? That's bullshit. And that mayor who's in over his head needs to show up. Needs to show up. Good morning to you. Dedicated to the chef coming back on today, and we all certainly could use a dose of happiness after all the COVID stuff and all the anxiety and the angst that has rolled through people's lives, both personal and financial, and for a lot of people, the uncertainty about jobs. So, the big man. Always does that. And so it'll be nice to hear his voice again live on the air. So this is dedicated to him.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
We'll come back to the weather here in a minute. I want to go to the governor of the state of Minnesota speaking right now, Tim Walz, longtime Minnesota legislator, now the governor.
People I called after seeing the video was Valerie Castillo, Philando's mother. We've become friends since the killing of Philando. And for those watching today who aren't familiar, Philando died in front of his loved one and his child. And left them behind and left behind a grieving mother who has become an advocate for justice, an advocate for reform, but more importantly, an advocate for kindness and decency. And when I talked to Valerie, she said, first and foremost, seek justice, seek fairness, and reach out and show kindness. What the world saw last night was not that. What the world has witnessed since the killing of George Floyd on Monday has been a visceral pain, a community trying to understand who we are and where we go from here. I'm joined today by Attorney General Ellison, by Major General John Jensen, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Colonel Langer of the Minnesota State Patrol, and Commissioner John Harrington. I spoke this morning with Reverend Jackson, who, much like Valerie, said a prayer for our state, said a prayer for over those grieving, said a prayer for peace, and then also said something very important. This is the moment where we start, but every time we get to this place, we never start the process to make sure it doesn't happen again. And that commitment amongst leaders in our community, watching this happen across the United States, watching another name be added, and for those of us who are old enough to Rodney King, to Mike Brown, and unfortunately now we've added George Floyd. The situation on the ground doesn't allow us at this time to tackle those issues. The very assets in our community, our libraries, our businesses, those nonprofits and government entities, our light rail system, are all shut down from this. We have to restore order to our society before we can start addressing the issues, before we turn back to where we should be spending our energy, making sure that justice is served swiftly, and that we learn something from what George Floyd gave on Monday. Now, I want to just be very clear, and I'm going to have the team talk about what transitioned last night when the state assumed responsibility over the security near the 3rd Precinct, where the state secured critical assets, and where the plan going forward to ensure that tonight our buildings do not burn, our citizens are secure, and that space that we're going to create allows us to get back to the conversation of serving justice and making sure that we're not adding to that list of unheard names.
A little bit different tone than the mayor of Minneapolis. Yay? Yeah, a little bit.
And I want to be very clear and speak to that community. The very tools that we need to use to get control to make sure that buildings aren't burned and the rule of law collapses are those very institutional tools that have led to that grief and pain. I understand clearly there is no trust in many of our communities. And the differentiation between the Minneapolis Police Department that we witnessed losing trust of those they're there to serve is very difficult for people to make for those standing up here with me. I understand that. And I will not patronize you as a white man without living those lived experiences of how very difficult that is. But I'm asking you to help us. Help us use humane way to get the streets to a place where we can restore the justice so that those that are expressing rage and anger and demanding justice are heard, not those who throw firebombs into businesses that our communities of colors have worked so hard to build back up areas that were blighted at one time and are thriving because of their entrepreneurship and their hard work. A library in an area where our children, as we know, are institutionally put behind, and the achievement gap for our communities of color is a shame on this state that we continue to admire by talking about and don't repair it. And that tool to help with that burned last night. So I want to just call out very, very clearly, as we put a presence on the street to restore order, it is to open that space to seek justice and heal what happened. I will not in any way not acknowledge that there's going to be that pain, but my first and foremost responsibility to the state of Minnesota is the safety and security of all citizens. We cannot have the looting and the recklessness that went on. We cannot have it because we can't function as a society, and I refuse to have it take away the attention of the stain that we need to be working on is what happened with those fundamental institutional racism that allows a man to be held down in broad daylight. And thank God a young person had a camera to video it, because there's not a person here or listening today that wonders how many times that camera's not there. These are tough questions. These are things that have been brewing in this country for 400 years. We have people out there putting themselves on the line to try and put out fires in our firefighters that are under attack. Those are the things I'm asking you. Help me restore that order. We will do that under state leadership and state guidance. You will hear directly from them of once that decision was made around 12:15 last night and that first mission was executed around 3:45 at the third precinct, we will see a difference. So I'm asking you, and you'll hear from them, to talk about this. I also want to think about what happens when we don't have that. People who are concerned about that police presence of an overly armed camp in their neighborhoods that is not seen in communities where children of people who look like me run to the police, others have to run from. So I understand that that's out there. But last night I got a call from a friend and a dedicated public servant. Senator Torres Ray called in her district, and it was on fire. And there weren't any police there. There weren't any firefighters. There was no social control, and her constituents were locked in their house wondering what they were going to do. That is an abject failure that cannot happen. We must restore that order to that. Senator Torres Ray has fought her whole life on these issues of inequities and making sure that people's voices are lifted up. But what she understands is none of us can lift those voices. None of us can tackle these problems if anarchy reigns on the street. I also want to address an issue, and this one is on me, and I will own it. Earlier this morning, when this mission was carried out under my direction to resecure the third precinct, to do so in a manner which I am proud of how it was executed by this team, no injuries and no loss of life, a reestablishment to put the fires out for those businesses, a CNN reporter, arrested by the state patrol a few minutes after hearing.
This is the governor of the state of Minnesota, Governor Tim Walz. Having lived in North Dakota, I want to say he was like Speaker of the House in one of the Minnesota chambers, whether it was the state senator or the state assembly. For many, 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 many years. And so Minnesota politics, pretty interesting, pretty liberal, like a lot of states, farming state, mining state, very conservative. And you have a huge city, Minneapolis-St. Paul, which is pretty liberal. So this is him talking about the events of last night.
Police action was in play is inexcusable. So to CNN, to the CNN team, to the journalists here, this is about having a plan. And that's what these folks are going to talk about. This is about having an aggressive approach to understanding what the community needs, to not coming in heavy-handed with them, but to create space where the story can be told. In a situation like this, even if you're clearing an area, we have got to ensure that there is a safe spot for journalism to tell the story. The issue here is trust. The community that's down there that's terrorized by this, if they see a reporter being arrested, their assumption is because something's going to happen that they don't want to be seen. And so that is unacceptable. We will continue to strive to make sure that that accessibility is maintained, that not only that, the protection and security and safety of the journalists covering this is a top priority, not because it's a nice thing to do, because it is a key component of how we fix this. Sunshine, disinfectant, and seeing what's happening has to be done. So again, I appreciate President Zucker's call. I appreciate his understanding in a situation that he was rightfully incredibly angry, and that falls squarely on me. That apology has been issued, and I think going forward to make sure it doesn't happen again. It's time for us to clean our streets. It's time for us to execute today in a way that shows respect and dignity to communities. I'm going to ask for a lot of help today of those folks who want to see it. It is my expectation that justice for the officers involved in this will be swift, that it will come in a timely manner, that it will be fair. That is what we've asked for. I have been in contact with Hennepin County Attorney, and I am confident that those very things I just said will happen. We will continue at the BCA to do a fair, a full, and a swift gathering of all of the evidence involved. But I would reiterate again, for so many of us, not all that's done in every other case where all of that evidence is gathered before. And I would ask that the swift justice be carried out. So Minnesotans, your pain is real. The chapter that's been written this week is one of our darkest chapters. And we can choose a few things. We can choose to try and get past this. We can choose to put a force out there and stop things from happening. We can hope that in the midst of COVID-19 or something else, it passes by and we don't have to turn that mirror to look at the harsh reality of those underlying gaps, whether it be healthcare disparities, whether it be educational disparities in our community's color, whether it be policing disparities in our community of color, whether it be wealth acquisition in our communities of color, are all very real. We pride ourselves on a state of openness. We pride ourselves on a state of being friendly. I've talked a lot about One Minnesota. That wasn't on display last night. I don't naively think everything heals and you come to the forefront and you say it'll be better. This is a community that demands and should expect more than words. They should expect results. Lieutenant Governor Flanagan and I have tried to make equity the center of everything we've done. But obviously in Minneapolis on Monday night, there wasn't a lot of equity for George Floyd. His family is probably wondering where the One Minnesota is for them. And that's on us, us as Minnesotans, us as the governor and the team that works with me, to put the things in order, to establish order in our streets, to establish and rebuild trust in our communities, to lift those voices up to be heard, not pleading for their lives, but demanding the changes necessary so no one else is put into that position. So I would like at this time to turn it over to Minnesota's Attorney General, Keith Ellison.
Governor, thank you. Martin Luther King said many years ago that riot is the way that the unheard get heard. He didn't condone it, but he said to the nation, as a person who always protested peacefully, that don't just dismiss that and ignore it and relegate it to just criminality and bad behavior. Actually ask yourself, what's going on there? And is it something that we as a society absolutely must pay attention to? I think we must pay attention to it. I'd like everyone to recognize the fact that the National Guard just a week ago was administering COVID-19 tests to help people. To help people. The presence you see on the street.
This is you. If the name Keith Ellison is familiar to you, you'll remember him. He's the first. He was the first black representative from the state of Minnesota. He's a Muslim. Yeah, that guy. Right. He joined the race for the chair of the Democratic National Committee in November 2016. So he's now the Attorney General. I just want to tell you though that how bad this is in Minneapolis for whatever reason. So I'll do weather and we'll take a break and I'll do a little just some news headlines here as we get going and the chef will join us. But there was a young black man by the name of Jamar Clark. He was shot and killed by police. And it was a domestic violence incident, yada, yada, yada. And so that happened. And again, he was partly, you know, at fault. He evidently tried to, you know, he got into a confrontation with police officers. He evidently, he tried to grab one of the police officers' weapons, right? And so anyway, but that was a big, huge deal in, I won't go over the whole incident, but it was a huge deal in Minneapolis, right? In 2016 is the Philando Castile case, okay? And he's the guy in the car, girlfriend streams him dying live on Facebook as the cop like completely panics and shoots him. Pulled over for a traffic violation. He's got a concealed carry permit and, you know, he gets killed because of it. That's 2016. In 2017, Justine Damon, an Australian woman who called the police, was shot as she walked up to the police car that she had called by a panicked police officer who shoots across his partner's chest from inside the vehicle and kills her. I've never heard of anything like it in my life. And now this. And so you can see the community has every right to be absolutely, positively ripshit at the Minneapolis Police Department. And to me, again, and I'll do the news, but what makes this so awful to watch is there's four police officers standing around as this shit goes on. He's already handcuffed. He absolutely, positively doesn't need to be treated like that, and he sure as hell doesn't need to die. So what in the fuck, man? So anyway, let me finish the weather. Weather in Marineland today. Currently, it is partly sunny and 79 in Quantico, so warming up on the East Coast. Down the coast at Camp Lejeune, it is 80 degrees and raining there. Yeah, East Coast much different. California, when it rains, it gets cold. East Coast gets hot. It's weird. 29 Palms, mostly sunny and 88 right now. Camp Pendleton reports Clouds in 63. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy 71. Camp Butler in Okinawa, dark cloudy 76. In early in the evening in south central Afghanistan, it is cloudy in 92. And in the Al Anbar province of western Iraq, it is sunny in 92. Currently, there's a light drizzle. What? Light drizzle, that's what it says. And 63 degrees in Southern California. Go figure. How did that happen? It's supposed to be partly sunny and 70 today, partly sunny 72 tomorrow, and partly sunny and 73 on Sunday. That's a look at your weather. Take a quick break. More Bomberman Radio coming up next. Actually, we won't take a break. Let's check some news headlines. The all right, top story in Stars and Stripes today is National Guard blocks access to Minneapolis streets after protesters damage buildings and burn a police station. And that happened this morning. So the Minnesota Guard called upon to restore order in the vicinity of the 3rd Precinct. So that going on, and obviously the press conference that happening right now is going on as well. U.S. warships challenges restrictions near disputed islands in the South China Sea. Now, I think this is a story that makes Americans feel good. Oh, we're out there. Well, the Chinese side of it is this. Hey, they leave. Okay? They leave. They do drive-bys, their freedom of navigation stuff, and then they leave. That's the Chinese narrative. So still the United States stays. You know, it's like people shrug their heads. Okay, that's great. You guys drove through. The USS Mustin, M-U-S-T-I-N, was challenging claims by China, Taiwan, and Vietnam that require military vessels to seek permission or provide advance notification to travel through the territorial sea under innocent passage. China claims sovereignty over the Paracel Islands and has occupied them since 1974, according to the CIA World Factbook. However, ownership of the island, and it goes into that, so Navy continues operations in the South China Sea. In another nonsensical story, it's the current day version of the body count. Coalition airstrike kills a senior ISIS leader wanted by the United States. $5 million reward had been offered for Matuz Numan Abid Nayef Najim al-Jabri, believed to be one of the top three leaders of the terrorist group of the Islamic State, was killed Tuesday in Syria. Before the strike, Syrian Defense Forces counterterrorism forces had tracked his movements in Syria and elsewhere. So there you have it. And that will have what impact on the operations of ISIS? Zero. Zero. Headline, Marine Airfield relocation on Okinawa to take 16 years longer and $5.4 billion more than originally projected. 16 years and $5 billion. The Japanese government acknowledged this week that the relocation within Okinawa of Marine Corps Air Station Futima to Camp Schwab, so Futima down in the south part of the island, where the population lives. Camp Schwab, located, it's not on the edge of the planet, but you could see the edge from Camp Schwab. There's nothing up there. And so you could see why the Japanese might want it up there. The project had been set for completion by 2014 by bilateral agreement, has been pushed to 2030. A spokesman for the Okinawa Defense Bureau told Stars and Stripes on Friday the overall cost of the new runway has skyrocketed from $3.3 billion to $8.7 billion. So, got that going for you. But luckily, we're going to split that with the Japanese. So, yeah. So you got that going for you this morning. The top headlines in Marine Corps Times: building a better boot camp, how to make Marines during a pandemic and beyond. Yeah, you know, in my opinion, a lot of learning going on. How do you do this? How do you do this? And how do you continue to operate? Again, if you look at the DOD, right, the huge population, I want to say 1.3 million, something like that, and there's been one death of an active duty service member. So the question is, how do you continue and not overreact? Overreacting costs you a lot of money. So that in the news today. And then top five stories in Early Bird today. Number one, President Trump extends Guard coronavirus missions until mid-August. So that in the news. Number two, the Pentagon has spent 23% of its COVID-19 response funds. Congress is asking, why not more? Wait a minute. We're doing what we think we ought to do. You want us to spend more? Interesting. Number three, Senators Inhofe and Reid. Inhofe, the Senate Armed Service Committee Chair, Reid, the ranking Democrat, backed new military fund to confront China. Did I say fund? I meant fund. As the U.S. Congress hardens against Beijing, two key lawmembers publicly added their support for a new military fund to boost deterrence against China in the Pacific, virtually assuring a Pacific deterrence initiative of some kind will be in the next defense policy bill. Now, the Pacific Defense Initiative is the sister to the European Defense Initiative, right? You see us in Poland and other things going on in Europe. That is what's called the European Defense Initiative. And so yeah, you're seeing a Pacific Defense Initiative, right? They said their version will back investments in land-based long-range strike capabilities, but also theater missile defense, expeditionary airfield, and port infrastructure, as well as fuel and munition storage to enable new modernized platforms rather than buying more platforms themselves. So we'll see. The Marine Corps certainly. Let me just tell you. Here's what I think. I think the Marine Corps could certainly service, you know, the confrontation with China without scuttling its ability to respond to the range of military operations as a close with and destroy force. I don't think those things have to be mutually exclusive. And so so we will see. Let's see. Number five is VA patient deaths from coronavirus hit 1,200, but leaders see progress. Let me tell you, by the time the VA and the state veterans home count the amount of death, right, we're all going to look at it and go, what happened? Right? What happened? Why didn't, as soon as the COVID thing got going, why didn't the public health people in this country scream, cordon off every senior living facility? Didn't do that. All right, we're going to take a break. Standing by with us is the man, the myth, the legend, the chef himself. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. And Kim Holmes going to join us. Yeah. And you'll get to hear his beautiful little voice. More of All Marine Radio coming up next here on a Friday, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.